7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 22 of Color of Magic, your magic podcast where we try to raise the profile of minority individuals and those that are kind of disenfranchised in the magic and gaming communities. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and so far for 22 episodes, I've had my buddy Brian Allen with me. How you doing, dude?
Doing good. 22. Oh my God.
Yeah, we're slowly making it there. It's a little bit of a trek, but we're pushing through it. Also, I want to remind everybody, we do have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/colorofmagic if you want to check that out. You can also follow each of us on Twitter and other social media platforms because we have cool stuff going on like YouTube and whatnot too. We're kind of all over the place.
Yep. It's a mass media empire, folks.
Yeah, we're trying slowly, but it's a small empire. It's like a Lego empire. We're building nice. It up. And for those of you that don't know, or I guess most of you probably would because you're regular listeners, we didn't have an episode last week. Part of it was because we've been vetting some people. I got a lot of good recommendations, we'll call them, for people to have on the show. So I'm reaching out to people now, and we'll very likely have some for the next couple of episodes. So some good interviews coming up and some topics we want to cover. And, you know, the news was a little bit light last week, so we didn't feel terrible making, like, week 22 the first time we skipped an episode. Plus, we had a bunch of personal projects we're tackling still, too. So sometimes you got to put a little pressure valve off every once in a while to let yourself get caught up.
Yeah, man. I have three minions, and my God, they're about to be out on spring break. Someone save me.
Oh, that's true. You've got that to worry about.
Yeah.
I don't have real minions. I mean, I have, like, two cats, but, you know, that's not quite the same.
And in addition to the week off, they're not going to school tomorrow because of one of those random teacher in service days that they have. Like, yeah, they just want to like an extra half week for spring break. You're not fooling anybody, teachers. Some of y'all had tickets to Cabo.
You know. Hey, I don't blame a man. If you can get a break, go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, since last week, we had a lot going on. I mean, I know I've been putting a lot out there as far as Twitter stuff. I've been working a lot on the YouTube page. I put some videos up with, if any of you, here's one of the things I get asked a lot because of my previous life about what you should do when you want to open a game store. It comes up, I probably get asked 4 or 5 times a year. And I kind of wanted to start building a resource so that way I just could reference people to it. Like, hey, go pay attention to this or go watch this. Because right now there are some other good resources out there, but you kind of have to already be in those social circles or have access to certain private groups to be able to get it. And I started putting this resource up there on YouTube, and it's actually been pretty well received so far. So I have 3 videos in. So if any of you are thinking about starting a game store or just starting a business in general, because most of it, I think it applies to a lot of things, I'm actually tapping some beginner game store business groups that I'm part of to help out new stores for topics they're going to want to see covered. And we're going to be adding those there as well. So just another fun thing that's out there for everybody.
All right.
And then alongside that, I'm also doing interviews with game stores. So I have my second one lined up, I believe, for early next week. So I may have that up by the end of the week next week as well. And I know you're still doing a lot over on your YouTube page too, Brian.
Yeah, as for anybody that hasn't checked out Alan's Ever After, we've been we ate the KFC chicken and donut sandwich last week. For those of you who don't know, that's a real thing.
KFC. I'm a little jealous, dude, because I ain't gonna lie, I ate me some Double Down, and whenever I saw that they were gonna put some Krispy Kremes on a chicken, I'm like, well, I like donuts and I like chicken. It's got to be good, right? Please tell me it's good.
It's, I mean, obviously you don't want to eat that every day, but yeah, as you know, a trashy fast food kind of treat. I enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, obviously you don't eat it every day. That's how people die. That's how you end up on that, like, those crazy, like, not Lifetime. What's that network?
100 Pound Life.
Yeah, one of those.
We mentioned that in the video.
Yeah, like. And here's the thing, like, and being dead serious, like, I want to, just since we mentioned it, like, I don't want to take shots at those people on those shows because, like, that is a real situation. I mean, I saw one where they literally had to remove part of the person's house to get the person out. Like, that's serious. But what the thing that always concerns me when I watch those shows is like, there's a point where they become largely immobile.
Yeah.
And only family members can really be allowing this to happen at that point. You know what I mean? Like, that's the part that bothers me.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I will take all the shots because I'm a hacky comedian and it's my job. So.
Well, yeah, that's your job. Like, that's why I have you here. Like, you're supposed to do that. I just got to keep the thing on rails.
He's the good cop, comedian cop, I guess. If you.
So I came. Well, let's talk about what we learned last week or in our time off, because it's been a couple of weeks. And I had two things.
Okay.
So I'll start with the first non-magic thing. Since it's been 2 weeks, I don't feel bad coming in with two topics. But the first, which for any of you that follow me on social media, I shared it this morning, actually, that there's a lady who owns a company, a black lady, and her company was, I guess, featured on a Target commercial. I believe it's called like Honey Pot Brands or something. And she was talking about the reason she started, and she's happy to be as successful as she is because it shows other young black women that they can come up and do something big on a national scale too. She apparently got death threats. Like, people went around the internet and downvoted everything for her company and left negative reviews, like calling her racist. People were taking shots at Target, you know. I'm like, what did she do? Like, nothing she said was remotely racist.
No.
Nothing Target did was remotely. Like, not only that, if you look at her slogan, her thing for her company is literally things made by people with vaginas for people with vaginas. Like, that's literally it. So it's for women by women. Nothing to do with race or anything.
That's for the, there's just a lot of people that don't want women to have even that.
Yeah, it's just crazy. But what's cool is a bunch of people, apparently her actual customers, came forward, went back, left a bunch of positive reviews to counteract the one-star reviews. Target came out publicly and backed her up or whatever. So it's mostly a good situation. But the fact that she even had to deal with that just for being featured in a commercial is just dumb. My second thing is that I've noticed a lot of people going around quickly wanting to call a format solved because there's a new big deck of the week, not realizing that pretty much every time you've said that, within 2 or 3 weeks, there's been another big deck, and then that's the new solved format, right? So just saying it's solved because somebody, I don't know, broke one tournament or something doesn't make it solved. Like, it just makes you sound silly. And more often than not, I would say be wary of people that are saying that. Like, don't get me wrong. There is a point where, like, if you don't see the format change for, like, 8 weeks, then you're like, yeah, maybe it was. But most of the time, and I'm sure there's outliers, but when I've been trying to follow people that generally something solved, a lot of times it's the people that don't really like playing constructed formats anyway, or don't like the particular format they're complaining about. So they're probably not even that well versed in it, which is just, frankly, just stupid to do. Well, because, I mean, I play a little bit of Modern. I play a little bit of Legacy. But if somebody was like, oh, what do you think this new deck, like, solved the format or whatever? I'd honestly just tell them, like, I don't know. Like, I haven't played enough. Like, I might look around and see some results, but if, like, unless it's 5 of every top 8 or something, then probably not, you know. And I'm not a big fan of every format. That doesn't mean I'm just going to go trashing it, and then my excuse is going to be, well, it's already solved, so the format's dumb. Like, it just seems like an ignorant place to come from.
He's the good cop, everybody.
I am, but, like, I mean,
dude, he won't play a game at the 600-pound people, but if you think you solved the format, Daquan's coming for you.
Well, for real. That's where we're at today.
Even the nicest guy in the world, which Daquan certainly falls into that category, they got one or two things, you know, that just hacked them off.
I'm just saying, people are lucky we didn't do a pre-show episode this week with us talking about politics or whatever. They would have really hated me this week.
You know,
we got into it a little bit.
One of my bosses said, you know, I think this is in the newspaper, but it applies for podcasts too. If you do a whole thing, in our case, if you talk for a whole hour and you haven't ticked somebody off, you probably are not doing it right.
That's probably fair, you know, because I think even of people, and honestly, that comes to a different point. And this is kind of some of what we talked about off the air too, is you should also be critical of the things you enjoy.
Absolutely.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying go like, I know some are going to hate this, but like crazy Star Wars fandom critical. But like, you know, if somebody says something that sounds too fantastical or too unbelievable, like, sure, question it. Go research it a little bit. Like, just don't take everything at face value. I don't want anybody to take anything I say at face value, because I'm sure I'm going to have a resource that I got information from that's not going to be accurate one of these times, or I'm going to have an opinion that doesn't line up for some reason, or even just misspeak on something, you know, like who knows? So yeah, people should come and just send me a message and be like, hey, this thing you talked about last time on your episode wasn't accurate for this reason. I'm like, okay, cool. That's just a learning opportunity.
The thing about Star Wars and magic is nobody connected with the creation of it thought it would still be around 20 or 30 years later.
Oh, that's very true. That is. If I told you before, if somebody would have came to me, let's say like 15-year-old me when I first pick up magic cards, and it's like, hey, you know, one day magic's going to be printed in 11 languages and there's going to be 70 countries represented in a world championship and there's going to be $1 million tournament. And they're like, sounds like a crazy pipe dream.
Yeah, we'd have fallen out laughing.
Yeah, like this never going to happen. I mean, there was a point where I would say probably even 10 or 12 years ago, where if somebody would ask me like, well, how much longer do you think magic's going to go? I'd be like, I don't know. We might be getting close to it.
Yeah.
But now we're at a point where I'm just like, it's going to go as long as they want it to go.
I joke with a friend of mine, if we go back in time and, you know, tell our past selves, in the course of 1 week, you're going to go out and watch a Wonder Woman movie, a Green Arrow TV show, and a Flash TV show. Are you high, future Brian? No, none of that is ever happening. You could have made up something believable.
You know what's funny? I wonder if when we get another, let's say 50 years down the road, if they don't look at like the last 20 years as the like period of geekdom. Because if you think about it, like most of the major TV shows involve some type of like nerds or geeks in that window of time, or were sci-fi or fantasy based. All the big movies that were raking in the dollars were all sci-fi comic book movies. You know, streaming became a thing. You know, there's the esports blew up. I mean, like, it really is kind of like the nerd geek period right now.
Although I'll say in fairness, if you look at the top movies going back decades, it's always been stuff like Star Wars, Indiana Jones didn't, well, at least the first couple art sci-fi, it got real sci-fi, you know, in the last movie.
Sure, but there's usually not a lot of them every year. You know, not like we've been having. Because, like, we had a stretch where it was practically one a month.
Yeah. But the big movies every summer, and I'd say this has been for years, there's some kind of fandom. If it's not, you know, comic books, it's Lord of the Rings. So I think we always go through our geeky phases.
Oh, sure.
Summer and Christmas.
Though, man, I saw in the new trailers for that New Mutants. Man, that thing was creepy as hell.
And I think it's supposed to, because, you know, the X-Men are supposed to be like, even though it's always been funny how the X-Men have some of the same powers as, say, Spider-Man or the Fantastic Four, yet they're outcasts because they were born that way.
I'm just saying, like, the New Mutants comic was never like these previews have been. Like, this is going to, like, I think it's going to make some people skin crawl. Some of the stuff's going to go down in that movie.
I seem to remember some of the, of course, I see where some of the New Mutants had, because like, didn't they have the guy whose power was like he could shoot pieces of his skin or something? They traditionally seem like they were the team that had the weird, the kind of like body horror mutants almost.
I don't know if that was them in the very beginning though.
Because the X-Men, for example, were the guys that other than Beast, you know, Beast didn't start out that way. All of the X-Men could, if they weren't in costume, could walk into your local grocery store and not be noticed. And the fact that the women are all ridiculously hot, you know, they wouldn't turn any heads for the most.
Well, sure. But let's move this along. Like, what did you learn in your time away the last 2 weeks?
Oh, I just wanted to point out, because there's multiple things I got just from this one piece. There's a great piece on Hipsters of the Coast. They're going to have an official cosplay column they're going to do on a regular basis by Zenaid Beckham, or Z-Bex, as she is known on Twitter. And just for example, in one paragraph, do you know how many hours go into producing one cosplay? I have no idea. I know it's a long time, but as far as like to the man hour, I don't know. Do you know how to heat and shape and seal Eva foam? I don't even know I said it right, let alone how to shape and seal it. Did you understand what you just read? Exactly. I knew nothing about cosplay, that I read this column and realized just absolutely how much I don't know about cosplay.
What's funny is I actually had researched a lot of that, because at one point I almost built a Transformer cosplay for myself.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I never went down the road because I knew, like, after researching, like, literally how much time it was going to take. And I just wasn't willing to, like, dedicate to it. But props to all the cosplayers out there, because that is real work, real creativity, and takes a hell of a long time.
It's one of those things that I absolutely want to, because, of course, you know, I'm an actor. I dress up in some not nearly this elaborate. I'll be honest. Nobody for Murder Mystery has put together anything. They do great work, but we don't work on any costumes for weeks or months at a time, generally.
And you know what? I also want to say this to anybody listening. Like, if you are going to use cosplayers to accentuate your business or some level of promotion, or you're using them as a draw to come to one of your conventions or a tournament or whatever, treat them right and pay the people.
What a novel concept.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of people that look at cosplayers and just like, oh, well, they do it for the love of the hobby, or they just really are big fans and whatever. But like, and I'm not even saying, like, you got to have a crazy bill for them, but, like,
you know, you promote your brand, you know, you should.
Yeah, if here's the thing, like, if a person or group or product or whatever is good enough to be a draw, to help you make more money, then you should compensate them. Now, to what level, that's debatable, but zero is not the right answer.
No.
And it may just be as simple as like, okay, look, we'll give you a free pass to the convention. We'll pay for your hotel room. And we'll give you like, I don't know, $100 a day for just being around taking pictures or whatever. Like, that would already be way more than a lot of them get.
Yeah.
And allows them to pocket a little bit. They get to recoup some stuff for some of their costume costs. They get to enjoy the convention, and they get to build their brand while being out and about. Like, but you got to do something. Like, it's bad, because I have a few people in my social circles, my Twitter friends and whatever, that they've told me like, oh yeah, like, I just got to play for free or whatever, and that's it. And like, hell, they spend extra money just shipping their damn costume parts to get where they need to go. You could at least reimburse them for that, or at least enough money to cover that.
I'd say, you know, that's for cosplayers, for artists, all different kinds of creative people. If they're helping, it's amazing how many people don't want to pay artists, writers. Then they want to use this, you know, as part of their brand for their Twitch stream or their YouTube channel or whatever.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. There's two different things, right? If you, let's say in the case of an artist, like, if the artist is just going to be there to sell their art or their wares or whatever, sure, then they have to buy a table like anybody else. But if you're literally putting them down on your marquee and in your web advertisements and in your promotional books or whatever, then you should be compensating that person in some way. Like, you're literally using them to get extra money.
Yeah. So you got to share a little of that money with them. It's hardly fair.
Yeah. And I don't think it's unreal. And a lot of them aren't even asking for a lot. That's the thing. Some would be happy with just a couple hundred bucks. I mean, I've run a convention and I had voice actors there. I had artists there. And you could do it affordably. And they are reasonable. I literally said, look, we're expecting probably no more than like 700 people. It's going to be this big. We'll probably have this many come through each day. You'll probably sell roughly this much from people buying whatever, whatever. And then we just worked out a deal.
We've talked about how one of our episodes just needs to be, you know, Daquan's con stories. Really? It would just be...
Man, I have several. I can tell you there was... I
heard of quite a few of them, and we just one episode, we just need to peel three or four of them off.
There was even one of the artists we got, even after talking to him, he was just like, cool, I won't charge you anything. You just pay for my flight and hotel. And that was reasonable. I mean, it was still several hundred dollars, obviously, but like, they were willing to work with me on the idea of like, we're not going to be huge. I'm not making like hand over foot. You know, I'm not a giant Comic-Con or something with 10,000 people or whatever. And they were cool with it, but he's like, still want to support you. You're reaching out, trying to be fair. We'll work out this agreement. And turns out he did quite well at our event, surprisingly. So
yeah,
he was not upset about that deal at all.
Something tells me he knew. He had an idea as to what he was going to make off of that.
This particular artist, I will say that he is definitely one of the better ones about brand building and being prepared to maximize his opportunities at events, I will say.
And that's really one of the most important skills you can have. And better than, you know, I was listening to an interview with John Travolta where he says, you know, some people are, while they may be a great actor or a great director, they may not be a great celebrity. And that's part of making money, is being a great celebrity. You know, just being able to just turn it on at a moment's notice. Even if somebody, obviously, if I see somebody, you know, having lunch, even if I'm a huge fan, I try not to bother them. But, you know, it's...
Oh, man, on that topic, can we get into a little bit of wrestling talk?
Oh, certainly. Like, you know, I'll never like, say no to a little wrestling talk.
Yeah, just like 5 or 6 minutes. All right, so... I don't know if any of you watch this, we'll put it in quotes because they're kind of new, the new wrestling organization, AEW. They have a show on Wednesdays called Dynamite, I think is the name.
Yep.
There's this character that goes by MJF is his name.
Yeah.
He's at this convention. Did you see this? Okay, he's at this convention over the weekend, I think, last weekend. And this family comes up and the dad's taking a picture of the kid that's with the wrestler and, you know, a couple other fans are there and they take this picture. And he's like flipping the kid off and telling him off. And now granted, the character is a jerk. The character doesn't like kids, you know, whatever. I get it. And even when like the news group reached out to him for a comment or whatever, he literally just said, F those kids. Like tried to stay in character 100%, right?
Wow.
And there were people praising him for this. And my problem with it is that's not brand building. Like, people are like, yeah, but he stayed in character. It's like, sure, but what does that do to get people to buy tickets going forward?
Oh, I think a lot of people, you know, there's still a lot of people that respect kayfabe. Not as many as there were, like, when we were.
But those people were already going to buy tickets if they were interested. Like, the goal is to get the other people that were on the fringes that might have to make a decision for where to spend their entertainment money to come give you that extra money. Now, let me put this in perspective. Like, I was at an event, this is years ago, where Kane, who is a giant, like, 7'2", ridiculous, 350-pound monster, like, wearing a mask, and he's just if you're next to him, I can tell you from experience, it's pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
But he's signing autographs or whatever because it's at this thing. And at one point, he literally slams his hands down, like gets up, like kicks a chair back. And of course, everybody's like, oh, hell. And we just all part like the Red Sea, right? Because we're just like, what do you do if dude that big's mad about something, right? So he comes around, and I guess he saw this kid that had been in line in a wheelchair with his parents or whatever. So he reaches down, locks the wheels, picks up the wheelchair, and poses for a picture with him.
Wow.
Signs a thing. And then he literally like broods and stares at every single person on the way back to his chair and then sits down, pulls his chair, doesn't say a word to anybody, just goes back to what he was doing. And I was like, that's how you brand build, right? Like yeah. Still the villain, still a giant heel, still scary as hell. You see a moment, you're trying to save the people some trouble because the line's a mess and they're in this wheelchair or whatever. You take care of them. You come back, still do your thing. Like, dude was still successful, still on TV today. Matter of fact, dude is a mayor now.
Yeah.
Like, nothing wrong. Like, dude totally stayed in character, but still did a good thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a way you can do it. But yeah, that just bugged me, you know. But anyway, that's my wrestling rant for the week.
Hey, you know, I'm appreciative of it. So what do we got next?
Yeah, so there were two events that happened over the last 2 weekends that I thought we should touch on. So the first was DreamHack Anaheim, and this was notable because for those who don't know, DreamHack is basically a giant event that happens a couple times throughout the year where people for all different types of competitive games come together, and it's just a giant weekend of a bunch of high-value tournaments. And we had our first, I guess we'll call it the first big non-Wizards sponsored arena event. I guess the only way to really classify that.
The Magic Deserver.
Also, side note, there's actually an organization right now working on tournament software to be able to run arena events online. So that's something we'll cover at a future date once they're closer to launching or whatever. But anyway, back on topic. So the interesting thing about this is they capped the event at 300 and only had 96 people show up. And the event was won by Aaron Gertler, who goes by Little Beep online.
I love that name, by the way.
Yeah, with Teamer Adventures, and he beat Just Guy Fires in the finals, which is pretty cool because there was like, I think, 8 blue-white decks in the top 16, so it's awesome that they crushed those. But I think the thing I wanted to touch on is really just the number of people that showed up, because you didn't even break 100. So you didn't even reach 1/3 the capacity that the event was able to handle. And people were like, oh, then this is such a failure, whatever. I said, but not really. And I think the perspective I wanted to bring is we also have to accept that there was a lot of unknowns for Magic players.
Yeah.
Because if you were already a Super Smash player, Rocket League player, you know, whatever, you understand how DreamHack works. Like, it's part of your culture. It's what you do. You read about the events. You watch the YouTube videos, whatever. That's not the case with Magic players. And there were some barriers to entry here that I don't think most of the Magic players were prepared for. That you had to buy a main convention ticket first to participate. Beyond, like, your initial entry fee or whatever. Like, you had to have a badge to get into the event. And then you also had to bring your own laptop, if I remember correctly, because that's how several of the other events are run. Which, when you think about it, makes sense. It's a giant electronic tournament event.
Yeah.
They're not going to supply whatever would end up being probably like a couple thousand laptops for every single person playing on any given day. So I think between those things, everybody was kind of on the fence of like, well, what's going on? Does this really make sense? Is the value there if I spend the extra or whatever? I don't remember what the entry fee was for the convention, but like there was these little expenses that people were saying, okay, is it still worth it for me in the end? And then on top of that, like nobody's really done this before with Arena. So people didn't really know. And then it was like, well, are a bunch of people going to turn up to play? And, you know, but honestly, turned out great. Coverage was solid. They got fairly solid Magic players, I would say, I mean, they're not necessarily like international names, but they were good Magic players, and the coverage was fine. The tournament looked like it ran pretty smoothly, and the value ended up being nuts because they paid out to the top 32 of 96 people. Yep. So one third of the players went home with $800 or more.
Not too shabby.
Yeah. So I don't think it was a failure at all. I mean, I think people were quick to go, oh, if only 96 people showed up, this proves that there's not enough support for Magic or for Arena or whatever. I said, no, that's not it at all. I think it was just, you didn't have that experience in the Magic community for people to speak to.
Yeah.
And I think now that people have seen that, like, oh, the coverage was good, they got the results posted quickly. You know, if there was any gripe I had, really, it would just be that whoever was in charge of their social media during the weekend seemed to, like, be taking digs at players, like when somebody made a misplay and lost a game or something. Instead of, like, celebrating that, like, oh, here's the moment so-and-so did this thing. It was like, oh, this person made a critical error on, like, turn six that possibly cost them the game or whatever, and then posted the clip. And it was like, maybe that's a thing in the video game community, but it just felt weird to see those headlines attached to video. But outside of that, everything else I thought was pretty good, pretty positive.
Now that I think about it, yeah, I've seen a lot of YouTube videos of, hey, you know, XQC fails horribly, gets trolled by Epic Winston play or something. So that's probably what that is, just a, I guess, a cultural thing between cards and video games.
Quite possibly. So, like, yeah, you'd be able to speak to that better than I would.
The second you described it to me, it's like, yeah, it sounds like a clickbaity YouTube title that I would probably end up clicking on and commenting on.
Well, there you go. So maybe that's why they did it, and it makes sense to them. But, yeah, other than that, I would think with the next two, I think the next one, Anaheim or DreamHack Dallas, I think, is the next one.
I believe so.
And then there's another one after that, a few weeks after. So, yeah, I think that could be really cool. I think it'll probably draw better. I think also location matters, too.
Yeah.
When you're talking about being more centrally located, you have more people that can drive to it. Whereas anytime you're out on either of the coasts, you end up with a large chunk of people that can only fly to the event.
Yeah.
Because driving is not really feasible. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how the next one goes. The only thing I'm sad about is I considered signing up for the Anaheim event and then just didn't. And now I'm just like,
Could have had $800 possibly.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew? But, you know, credit to everybody involved with the DreamHack event presentation. It was really solid. Their setup was good. And I think it's a good start. I think these are the type of events I think you need to have happen when you're talking about building Magic up as a competitive sport, whether you want to call it esport or not, tabletop, whatever, but just as a competitive sport for the next few years, you have to have outside entities running large events and doing some level of promotion and sponsors coming in or whatever. And I think this is a good first step toward that.
Absolutely agree.
Then the other event was the Mythic Point Challenge, which was an interesting experiment. I think these will be cool going forward, but for people who don't know, this event, since it's the first one, was a chance for players to earn Mythic points for, I guess, their end of season ranking or whatever, which will be used to determine, well, for players already in the MPL and the Rivals League, who's eligible for the Gauntlet and to secure your spot in future MPL or Rivals, whatever.
Planeswalker points, right? Was that the previous?
Yeah, but the difference is I think Planeswalker points were more just collected for everything you did.
Okay.
And then the only thing you could really use Planeswalker points for was like getting buys at Grand Prix and stuff. And occasionally there'd be other events where you could get a buy or two, but that's really all they got you. Whereas these, you earn enough, like you're getting, well, a yearly paycheck, effectively, if you get into Rivals or the MPL. And the way it worked was, it was a standard tournament. Now, I was on the West Coast, so registration was between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. local time, which is brutal, let me tell you. I mean, because your options are really either just like go to sleep early and then wake up and just register and play, or like register, go back to bed, hop back on at like noon, play your matches, you know. And you get to play from the first match is eligible to start at 8 a.m. and I believe it went all the way till 7 p.m. local time. So obviously put in whatever time changes for whatever time zone you were in. And then you were playing to get 10 wins or 3 losses, whichever happened first. For each win, you got 200 gems in arena. And then for each win starting at 5 plus, you got a number of mythic points. So it was a pretty cool format the way it played out. I think it was very fair. Because, I mean, playing till you get 3 losses is pretty good because it allows you to get a bad draw or two.
Yeah.
Like, just play a long match where something doesn't break your way. I did not do well. I went 4-3. Which is sad because I was like 1 win away from getting mythic points. But, you know. And the interesting thing for me is I had spent the last couple of days going like, well, you know, the red decks are tough or whatever. And that's kind of like my worst matchup, whatever. So I had found a way to beat the red decks. And then I beat 3 of them. So those were 3 of my 4 wins. But then I lost against other decks I'd been beating previously.
Yeah, I hate so like, that happens.
Yeah. So I kind of over-engineered myself out of it. But yeah, overall, I think it's a cool way to engage people. I think it was a neat way to give some different points. It was cool because also if you were... Okay, so to be qualified, you had to be the top 1,200 from, I believe, all the way back in each of the months of October, November, December, January. If you were in the top 1,200 finishers, constructed or limited, you qualified. And then all the rivals and MPL players were qualified. So they had a chance to play and earn points as well, and then everybody else could. But, you know, some of the question has been, like, should people play in future Mythic Point challenges? And I think the answer is yes, assuming you have the free time. Because you already did well, and you already play a decent amount of arena if you're in the top 1,200.
Yep.
So, like, card access and whatever probably shouldn't be an issue. And then there's also the reality is, like, you don't know when those points are going to matter, right? Let's say you'd have played this last week and you went 9-3 and you get, I think, like 4 or 5 points maybe for that. And then you play another one and you get another 2 or 3 points. And then you go win like a qualifier or something in paper and that gets you a couple. And then let's say you do well at a Grand Prix and maybe you finish top 16. We won't even say top 8. You finish well enough to get some points and some money. Well, now you're looking at enough points that, like, maybe you can get to the top ranked X players and challenge for a thing. You know what I mean? Like, definitely. You may not start out at a point where you think you're going to need the points, but you could finish at an area where you're just like, man, if I'd have had like 3 more points, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I can't speak to, you know, the legendary competitive players experience. I know anything like, for example, Madden that I try to play on stream semi-competitively. I know if I, for some reason, I don't play for a couple of days. I'm terrible when I first log back on. So I don't know if for some people, I assume for some people, Magic is probably the same way where you need to keep the muscles sharp, so to speak.
Yeah. And truthfully, also, I think there's some personal stuff there too. When you talk about, I say you, but just like when players talk about wanting to be better and wanting to prove themselves, that's that and the other. Well, how about an event where everybody else also did equally well to qualify?
Yeah.
Like, that's your chance.
Iron sharpens iron, as they say, you know, sport testing and whatnot.
And I'm not saying, like, that event defines you on how good you are. Because, like, yeah, some bad things can just happen. Yeah, or you can misplay or who knows what, right? Things can still happen. But ultimately, if you want to be better, you should be playing in these events as well. And there's a chance you run into get to play one of the rivals players or one of the MPL players who are playing that day. And that's going to be one of the rare times you're going to even get to face off against them. So, yeah, I think going forward, cool event. I think it's a neat thing to have available. I also like that kind of between other big events, it was something to do and something to talk about. It gave people some material that they could stream. It gave them some stuff to talk about on Twitter. So even if it's just a little PR event, it was pretty cool. And it's pretty low cost in general. And from what I could tell, most players were done with their event in about 4 hours. So that's not too bad, really, for afternoon. And you can do it from the comfort of your own home. Even on your own time, you could have played your first 4 or 5 matches, went, grabbed a bite to eat, go run some errands, come back and knock out your other 5 or whatever, you know? It's pretty convenient.
That's the thing you can do with Arena that you can't do with, you know, paper magic. So by all means, let's use the technology.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. But yeah, like I said, I just kind of wanted to touch on those couple of events because I think it was... Each one of those events kind of brought something different to the table and gave us something different to talk about and just different perspectives of kind of like how to view both Magic as a whole and Arena within kind of the greater sphere of things going on between like both Arena or more like Magic centric people and non-Magic centric people. As I was kind of neat that those were back-to-back events that both happened to involve Arena, but involve different groups of people in some ways.
And I'll say there's been several tournaments I played in where if I go back and say, you know, what's in addition to the misplays I made, what's one thing that would have helped? And one thing was, man, just a break in the middle of that where heck, I went to Walmart, just didn't think about it for a minute, then came back and played another 4 or 5 games.
You know, and in a lot of ways, that is often one of the reasons I don't play the super slow control decks for large events.
Yeah, because you're going to time just about every time.
Yeah, at least 4 rounds of the day you're going to go to time. And if you end up in a draw, then you're going to be playing other decks that also went to a draw. And like, whereas if I play something just more aggressive or even a mid-rangey deck that can just hit a big end-game point, like I'm going to give myself some like 10-15 minutes every other round to just go grab a drink, grab a quick bite, maybe snack on some gummy bears I brought with me, you know, and I can just take care of myself instead of just being mentally taxed every single round with minimal breaks.
So true.
Self-care matters even at tournaments.
Yep.
But we have some things to talk about at the dinner table.
So we call a segue in the industry right there.
But, you know, while I guess we're going to go in a different way this week. We had some stuff we wanted to talk about, and we debated a couple of topics. And I think we decided to just kind of do the good public service thing. Yeah, the news of the week, which is the coronavirus. And I know some people are probably tired of hearing about it, whatever, but this is something that's relevant to the Magic community. First things first, for the basics, for those of you that don't know, like, coronavirus isn't new as a classification of a virus. Like, it has been around before. Matter of fact, you can find old cleaning solutions, other things that mention that it kills coronavirus. However, the COVID-19 that the current strands of the coronavirus develop into is the virus that's the concern right now because we don't have a current treatment to it. Now, granted, not the same lethality at the time, so don't make that conclusion here, but to put it in terms, it's kind of like how HIV exists and becomes AIDS. That's kind of where we're at with the current strand of the coronavirus becomes the COVID-19. Just so everybody knows what you're actually talking about when you read through all this stuff. They're similar, but not the same. You know, square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square.
That was deep. Well played.
I mean, that's what it is, though. I mean, that's where we're at. And I'm trying to put it in terms that people can understand. And
you went with math in America.
Hey, our listeners, I'm giving them credit for being smart because they're listening to us. Now, the reason we wanted to bring this up is because one of the biggest things they're telling us to do is limit your public engagement. And we're Magic players. We like going out for F&M. We like going to tournaments. You know, these are all things we enjoy. We enjoy our gathering part of Magic. So with that, you do need to take some precautions and take them seriously. I mean, and I can tell you, me personally, it's a big deal because we've now had, as of today, it may be more by the time this recording goes live, probably will be, honestly, but there's been 70 major cases already in the state of Washington. You know, enough that the governor's come out and said they're actually going to pay for all the coronavirus testing in the state for people that need it. They're also going to be the one of the first areas to test any vaccines as they are developed, just to keep it from spreading, as this is apparently one of the hotbed areas. So it's something we're keeping an eye on. The other thing is, too, for those who don't know, there have already been some issues with, like, Wizards of the Coast. Some of these other big companies have canceled their appearances at the Gamma Trade Show, which is supposed to be next week. So several of the largest companies have already decided, like, they really, on twofold direction, aren't going to subject their employees to that, and they also don't want to contribute to the spread of bringing anything back to their offices. So that's a thing you're seeing happen. Unfortunately, as of this time, Emerald City Comic Con is still going to happen, because I think they are also either next week or the following week. However, they have posted, I looked at this earlier, that they are giving refunds to everybody who would like to refund their ticket up until the day of the event, I think, if you already know you're not going to make it. So that's a thing. The other event that we do promote, as we've had Aaron on the show to talk about, the Hunter Burton Memorial Open, that's in 3 weeks, and they are still going to move forward, though that event is much smaller by comparison. There's still going to be a lot of people there.
And not in Washington, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Also not in the state of Washington. But they are taking precautions to work with the hotel and stuff already. I've had discussions with Aaron, ask him about it. They are doubling down on, like, the sanitation, the hand sanitizers, you know, the whole nine yards. So they're also treating it very seriously. And with that, I also want to say, like, there's some things you can do that are very basic, but make a big deal. The first is limit your touching of other people and other people's stuff. And this is a thing that I personally, and I'm sure you've dealt with this a lot, you've been to a lot of conventions.
Yeah.
But it's something that I've always made it a point to be careful about. And I always carry, if you notice, I try to be kind of discreet about it, but I usually have a small mini hand sanitizer or something in my gaming materials when I go to a convention. Because often when I'm at convention, I'm working in some capacity. And that's just like, you know, like the last one I worked, I must have either handed something to or shaken hands with literally, if I just had to guess, it'd probably be like 600 people or more. Like, that's a lot of exchanges between people. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's handling money. Everybody's touching each other's cards. Yeah, there's just, you know, especially if you go and do a demo somewhere while other people have touched those materials and now you're touching them. And, you know, it's like, it's just a giant Petri dish at a convention or an event.
And when I'm not at conventions, I'm doing, you know, doing stand-up shows. And, like, I'm doing an event Saturday. It's for an older crowd. Half of that crowd, like, they're leaving from that event and getting on a cruise ship somewhere. Because that's what they do for fun.
Yeah, that's another place. That's a giant Petri dish.
Yep.
You know. And granted, I know that the majority of our audience, you know, is not going to fall in the danger ranges, which are basically, if you're over like 65 or you're under age 8 or you're already immunocompromised in some way, like, it's going to affect you greater than everybody else. But that still doesn't mean that we can't carry it and we can't spread it, whether it's between us or to other people or whatever. So just limit how much you're touching everybody's stuff. The other is wash your hands, use sanitizer. And everything I've seen says make sure you're doing a real washing of your hands. Like, get it under there 20 to 25 seconds. Make sure you're putting a real scrub on. Not just like, oh, I ran some water over my wash my hands. Like, take just a second, you know, sing a little song to yourself or whatever over the sink and like get yourself cleaned up. Like, it's not a big deal. You should want to do that anyway.
Because they'll be out there, you know, scrubbing their hands. To the windows! To the wall! Maybe not that song. I don't know.
I don't care what song you use, man. Like, just make sure you clean up. The other thing, too, and I'm trying to reach out to a couple of my friends in the medical profession, and they haven't responded back yet. But my understanding is when you're going to get hand sanitizer, try to get, I believe it's the antimicrobial hand sanitizer, not just the antibacterial, because we're talking about a pretty potent virus potentially. Yeah. So you want something that has a higher chance of killing it. So you want the antimicrobial, not the antibacterial. So if you're going to carry one, now granted, if that's all you can find is one, then they'll carry it and use it. It's still going to do something. But for maximum effectiveness, you know, find the best one you can. And then other than that, you know, you do see people wearing masks and stuff now. And also, yes, I'm sure people have been to their local CVS or grocery store or whatever and seen that the disposable surgical masks have been sold out everywhere. You can still get some online. And there's also other alternatives. There are reusable masks. We have some that we've used because I have chickens. So when we go out and clean out the chicken coop, like you're kicking up all the hay and the chicken poop or whatever when you're cleaning it out. And you don't want to be breathing that in. So we have those. And they're just like a cloth-type mask with a small vent.
And, we always talk about what did we learn. I learned something new about Daquan every week. Like, you got chickens? You know.
Yeah, how did you not know I had chickens? I'm pretty sure I mentioned that before that I had chickens.
Probably have. And I probably just like, it didn't register. And it just at that moment, it hit like, wait, Daquan owns chickens.
Yeah, I have six of them. I will take pictures and share them sometime. If people are just curious, let me know. I will put pictures up on Twitter or whatever so everybody can see my brood of chickens. But yeah, so you can
get man in the world, people.
Yeah, I have a dude, believe me, I have a lot of angles about me. But yeah, so you can get these reusable masks, and they're basically, you know, they just come on, they tuck around your ears. Some have adjustable straps or whatever. You can wash them, reuse them. Some of them have filters in them, whatever. And those aren't that expensive. I think you can find some for like $20 that are reusable. Some of them you can buy like sets of three or four for like $20 or whatever for a slightly lesser brand, but you get three of them. There's also these other ones that you see people kind of wearing to raves and stuff that have like the faces and stuff on them that are like cloth that you can pull up over. And those are reasonable, you know, or they make a stylish headband. We're not using them as a mask. I'm like, that's totally fine. Like, basically, it's just doing something to limit the air you're breathing when you're in a large crowd that could be infected with something right now, you know, and protect yourself a little bit better. And then if they're washable, great. You just toss them in the laundry when you get home, wash them, use them again next time.
And a lot of these things we're talking about are things that you should be doing anyway at a large event.
Yeah, truthfully. I mean, like I said, I already have a habit of doing it. Like, I just know. And what's funny is I only started doing it because I had so many people telling me, they're like, oh man, I think I caught the con crud, and you know, yes, they're sniffling and hacking up stuff for like a week after the convention.
It's a real thing. And,
oh, I think it's a real thing too. I've seen it happen enough times. But then I think just seeing that happen to a few people, unfortunately I dodged it. I just got into the habit of like, dude, I don't want that to be me, because I have other things I'd rather do than just lay up sick for a week after having a week of fun. And it's worked so far, so I'm going to keep doing it. And now's as good a time as any. The only other thing I would probably add is, please, if you are one of the people sharing the information or the memes, comparing it to the flu, please stop.
Yeah.
Like, they are not the same. The numbers we have on the flu are curated over a couple of years at a time. We've only really been researching or testing for this strand of the coronavirus since like December. So they're not going to compare. When you're saying like, oh, well, so many more people die from the flu than whatever. Like, if we stay on the current pace, this thing can end up with 3 times the number of deaths that the flu has in a year. Like, you're talking about the flu has something like a, not even a 1% fatality rate. I think it's like 0.35 or something, versus all right, now we're clocking it at almost 4% rate on the coronavirus. I think it's like a 3.8 or 3.9 as of yesterday.
In charge of any events or hold any public office, please stop making those comparisons.
Well, yeah, again, today was a good day for people not to have had our pre-show conversation. But yeah, and I think that's really it. Just try to limit your information to actual sources, preferably CDC, the World Health Organization, anything like that. And then really, when you're going out to these tournaments or other things, really decide how to take care of yourself, if you really need to be at the event or not. Like, I get it. If there's a qualifier going on and, you know, there's going to be 50 people there, whatever, you're trying to get on the pro tour, it's one of the few opportunities you're going to have, or I guess the, whatever we call the players tour or whatever. Cool. I get it. You're going to go. That's an opportunity. You don't have many shots at it. That's a thing you feel you got to go to. Fair enough. Honestly, I might still go to it. I'm not in a situation that I'm like paranoid enough yet that I'm just not going to go into audiences. I'm still planning on being down at the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. Like, I'm still going to go do commentary at that event. But take care of yourself going to these events. And if I can really make a request to everybody, the reason, or plead with everybody, I guess, is consider the fact that it's not necessarily just about you. Like, you may overcome a sickness or you may not get it or whatever, but you may pass it on to somebody else. So just take those precautions, please. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add. I kind of dominated that. Sorry, man. Like, is there anything else you want to add to any of that, Brian?
You had the, because again, you have the experience. You are in basically American coronavirus central right there. So you've had, you've had more experience with that than I have, at least in the.
Yeah. Our case right now is most recently I heard there was a hospital facility. I believe it was one of the Kaiser Permanente facilities near here that had a patient come in that had it, and they believe some number of the staff that were treating him may have potentially had it. They're all quarantined currently. There was a hospital in Northern Washington. I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was Kirkland, I think. They had some significant number of people. Oh, no. It was a elderly facility.
Okay.
And some number of the patients and the staff, they believe, have it and somehow like passed it between them. So they're also being observed right now. And then there was one case that I know of, I haven't checked the news today, that, or at least in this particular situation, that a U.S. postal worker at one of their processing facilities
here
had also tested positive for it.
If you were going to pick...
And that one actually wasn't far. I think that one... What's that?
If you're going to pick one of the worst professions to contract the virus, it's somebody that works in the postal industry.
Yeah, because they're going to touch a lot of things.
Yeah. Like, you talked about how you probably shook hands, you know, or passed on to 600 people. I don't even, just any postal worker, I can't even fathom what their number must be.
I also want to toss in there, too, that this isn't an airborne virus. So you're not just going to necessarily just get it from, like, you know, it just being there. Like, but if somebody sneezes next to you,
yeah,
well, then, yeah, that's a thing that could happen. And obviously, contact to contact is probably going to be one of the most popular ways that it's passed. Which is amusing to me because this is one of the few times I have a habit of sitting on my hands. And this is one of the times it's probably going to be good.
I know that about you.
No, I do. It's a weird thing. Like, sometimes you'll just catch me for no good reason when I'm just, like, sitting at a desk or something. I'm just sitting on my hand. And I think I started doing it a long time ago as a way to just not touch my face a ton. Because I already had a habit of doing that. So this just limits it a little bit.
And I'm sure you've done it around me because we've known each other forever. And I just, you know...
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's not a big thing. It's not really noticeable. It just looks like my hands are sitting down in the chair next to me. But yeah, the biggest thing is, though, like, you know, we don't know most of you listeners personally, but we do care about all of you as humans and as people. And we would love for everybody to take care of themselves. Like, we want more positive people in the world. We want more people to play Magic events with at some point. Hopefully, we'll encounter more of you. And this is, right now at least, largely preventable to keep it from spreading anymore. So let's just do our part to help with all that.
Good talk.
On that note, Brian, why don't we tell everybody how they can find you on social media?
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Alan's Ever After is our family YouTube channel.
And you can find me on most social media platforms at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And right now I've been real active on Twitter, so you can kind of keep up with everything I'm doing over there and some good conversations, especially as we get updates around the virus and whatnot. And you can see some cool magic content over on my YouTube page, found under the same name. And right now I think I just loaded a deck tech for a mono black deck, which is very cool. And I'll probably be doing some streaming with that here after I get this episode edited. So you'll probably see some new stuff there as well. But I think that's where we're going to end it for this week. Good talk. Had fun. All of y'all stay safe. Stay healthy. It's getting crazy out there. Hopefully we will see y'all next week. So wherever you are listening, whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.